Welcome to SEO Link Building with Julian Goldie, a podcast about getting your website to rank higher on Google so you can get more traffic, leads, and sales, all from SEO Link Building. Now, here's your host, Julian Goldie.
Hey guys, Julian Goldie here, and this is an exclusive because normally it's just me yapping away about SEO, but actually we've got Julian on today, and Julian's an expert in recruiting. So do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Well, I'm glad to be on the podcast, Julian. Thanks for inviting me. Always good to be with someone sharing the same first name. It's not that often.
Yeah, is it so good to meet you, Julian?
Julian do a podcast here. I do recruiting. In fact, I do two things. I do recruitment and we do also EOS implementation. So for those who don't know what EOS is, it's a management system. If people have questions, maybe you have questions about EOS, we can get into this, but I think you want to talk more about recruiting. EOS is a management system.
Yeah, that's it. And I would say anyone who's listening and trying to build a team, like, EOS is one of the best things I've implemented in the business this year. Would highly recommend it.
It's quite good. So that's what we do.
Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, today we're going to talk about how to recruit a team for SEO, you know, how to get the best writers, the best content editors, and managing the whole process. Because I know that a lot of website owners just don't know where to start, or they try and do everything themselves and it becomes a complete nightmare because they don't have time to build the business and do SEO at the same time. So why would you say you need to hire? You know, what I would say is, like, a lot of people, especially when they're new to recruiting for, you know, for an online business or for the website, they try and go really cheap, or they don't bother, you know, creating any sort of recruitment system at all. Why do you think it's necessary to hire, like, the best people for your team?
So it's a good question. So first of all, there's a lot of people, as you say, who hire, you know, people who are slightly on the cheap side. And I would say when you get started, there's nothing wrong with it, first of all, because you kind of need to be in that process where you kind of, like, you know, proof of concept, you know, can my business be successful?
Yeah.
Can it be profitable? And maybe as well, you know, you're not comfortable closing clients at a certain price level. Mm. So you need to be operating at a level where you're comfortable and everything, you know, acquiring clients who are paying you a certain money and this and that. So I would say, first of all, there's nothing wrong if you're in that situation to go through these steps, because it's a journey and you're going to have to go through some steps. And there's no point, you know, scratching your head and thinking, you know, I need to pay 50,000 a year or something, sales manager, whatever, if you're not at that level yet. So first of all, that's it.
So now, figure out your profit margins first, then, basically.
Figure out your profit margin, get comfortable closing at, say, you know, higher ticket clients, people who value your services more, build your authority, build your business, go step by step. But when you get to a stage where you can afford paying people better and you can afford higher talent, then, you know, of course, I'm going to say that I'm a recruiter, so I'm not going to say the contrary. But, you know, I've seen enough businesses where, you know, they get into a situation where they have, you know, a huge team of cheap people and everything. Mm. And, you know, quite often the business can go quite the wrong way and you're not really able to scale it, because what you're going to do, so what happens is that if you have average people, you're going to have to try and overcompensate with a lot of processes and stuff like this. And this is where people get into craziness about, like, you know, micromanagement and whatever. They want to processize everything. Typically, like, a lot of Amazon sellers will do that. You know, they try to think that they can actually run an entire, you know, 8-figure business with some VAs at $800, you know, a month.
Yes, I can imagine that's a total nightmare. Yeah.
That's cool for some part of your business. You can't run the entire business like this. And what they end up doing is they create all these processes. They usually have a ClickUp or an Asana that's full of complex process and very detailed instructions for everything. And, you know, at the end of the day, especially where businesses and agencies like yours, whatever, you deal with ambiguity a lot, you know, and it doesn't matter how, you know, complete and thorough your processes are. There's still going to be a level of ambiguity, a level of decision makings, a level of, you know, initiatives and stuff like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, better people will make better decisions. You know, you see it in sports, you see it, you know, everywhere. A better player will be able to analyze and decide, you know, on more complex situations than your average player.
Yeah,
and it's the same in business.
Yeah, I mean, I found that, you know, first of all, I would say when you don't hire the right person, you know, whether it's for your affiliate marketing website or whether it's for your agency or, you know, whatever business you run, if you don't hire the right people, you can't delegate properly. And like, you end up micromanaging, you end up writing these crazy complex SOPs and systems that still go wrong in ways you can't imagine.
Yes. Yes.
Whereas like, if you have a team you can delegate responsibilities to rather than tasks, your life just becomes so much easier as an entrepreneur. And, you know, when you've only got a limited amount of time anyway, running a business,
this you eight don't want to be 10 hours a day, you know, you're not going to do more than this, you know, whatever.
No, that's it. And even then, you know, if you work 8 or 10 hours a day, you might not be productive for 50% of that. So
that's it.
It's exhausting having a low quality team, I would say.
It is, it is. And it takes a lot of brain space, especially when you onboard someone and, you know, he's been working with you for months and they're very average and you're thinking, should I keep that person? Should I cut that person? It's not going the way I want. It creates this problem. There's actually, I'm going to be very popular on your channel with quotes like this, but there's a quote by Donald Trump where he says, the worst employees are the good employees. The very good employees, or, you know, you're keeping them. that's no problem. The bad employees, you're getting rid of them. So you don't, there's a good, average, good employee. What do you do with them? And this one, they take a lot of brain space because you're always thinking about, what am I doing? What am I doing? They've done this. That was actually quite good. And then they're doing this. This is really, really terrible. And what am I doing? And you're always like in between two chairs kind of thing.
I found like, if you don't, you got to be fair to them as well, right? Like if your standards are high and you're trying to achieve something great, like for example, our business, we're always trying to make sure the customer service and the links that we build are like the highest quality. It's not fair to put someone who's not up to that job in there, you know, and
because you're going to stress them out and they're going to be miserable and everything. Yes, that's true as well.
It's going to be really difficult for them. So, and I think the other thing is, well, you're going to make sure that you're continuously developing the team that you have, you know, making sure they're always learning. And that, I guess that's where EOS comes in a little bit.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. But I would say to that, you know, there's, it comes down to what you can afford as well. But there's something like, for example, for people who listen to you, and I used to get caught with this, you know, typically you're recruiting for a job where you want 2 or 3 years of experience in such and such. Let's say, for example, for you, let's say you're recruiting a sales manager.
Yeah.
And you want someone who knows agencies and who knows like e-commerce and stuff like this. And you want someone with 2 or 3 years experience doing this because you don't have the time to train someone for 6 months so that they can start being productive, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I would say, I think that's a fair way of doing it. You will still have a certain amount of applicants who don't have the experience and are going to try to get through. And often, especially in sales job, but it's true as well for writers and people like this, for people who do SEO, which is why I think it's important to talk about that. They are going to try to demonstrate to you that they've got what it takes and they got a lot of attitudes and they've got a lot of, you know, like courage and hard work and everything. And I find that quite often they're sort of like, if I'm recruiting, they're going to try to leapfrog and go directly to my client and do this and that and stuff and try to show like how much resource they have, which is great.
Yeah,
but
so
often it's just they're just not good because for whatever reason, if they don't have the experience and you're looking for someone with experience, you know, even someone with a lot of attitude and a lot of courage and a lot of resources won't make for some experience that you might need. Let's say, for example, you know, you're looking for a sales manager and you want someone who has contacts in agencies. Because you're thinking, and it's sometimes quite often in B2B, it's the right way to do it. If someone comes in with a big contact book, and from day one, they can take the phone and say, hey, I'm actually now working for this company, I've changed job, this is a great company, I'd really like to introduce you to Julian, he's the owner, he's a great guy, blah, blah, blah. If you can do that with 15, 20 people on day one, Do you see where this is going? You know, kind of
Yeah,
thing.
that's it. Yeah, hitting the ground running.
That's it. Lots of resources, lots of courage, being ready to, but not knowing anything about the industry, not having any contacts, it's not going to make up for it. Full stop. And sometimes, you know, quite often you need to be very, very careful. If you're looking for someone with a specific knowledge and a specific skills, attitude can't make for everything.
Yeah, I
So,
see.
yeah.
There's almost like the gap is too big to
Too
bridge.
big. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Between
That's
someone
right.
who's experienced and someone who's
That's
not done it
it.
before. Yeah.
That's it. That's it.
So if you were like to go out, let's say I was a website owner and I wanted to build a team starting with content writers and then maybe an editor on top of that managing the team, where would you start? Like, what's the best approach to getting the best talent?
Yeah, so first of all, so you need to I use this metaphor quite a lot when I talk about talent recruiting and recruiting in general, is you're looking for gold, which is quite handy because you know you're Goldie, so we're gonna be looking for gold.
Coincidence.
It's an easy one. So you're looking for gold. If you're looking for gold, okay, there's a few things you need to line up properly to be very, very successful. First of all, you need to know what you're looking for. So you're looking for gold, that's great, but what kind of size of nuggets, you know, are you looking for very small or quite big or whatever? What kind of purity of gold as well you're looking for? So knowing exactly what you're looking for is very important. So let's just take an example that you've got a gold detector, for example. Okay, and you can see where this is going. You got a gold detector, that's great. If you set up the gold detector for any like precious metal, the gold detector is going to do beep, 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 beep. If it finds, you know, a diamond, if it finds copper, if it finds, you know, any kind of precious metal, not just gold. So you might be digging and getting something that's not actually what you're looking for. So defining exactly what you want, what is gold? What is gold for your business? What does gold mean for your business in terms of talent is so crucial because once you set up your gold detector properly, it's got to do like beep, 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 beep for the right talent for your business. So what I mean by all this is spending the time to really define your job is key. And a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people think, oh, I need some writers because I need to write some articles, whatever. Okay, great. But what kind of articles? What does success mean for a content writer type of job? What are the KPIs that he needs to achieve?
So you
So
should
if
set
someone,
KPIs before going in and recruiting, yeah?
yes, absolutely, 100%. And if you remember when we did that recruitment for your job, you know, the account manager, I challenge you, and we spend quite some time to do that job definition and the KPI and everything, because that's so key. And if someone wants to start putting together, you know, a content team or something like this for their business, I would say the first thing you need to do is really define what are you trying to achieve with your content team. You know, and this is where the whole EOS thing is so important, because you don't want to start recruiting for stuff that actually are not really hitting the mark for your business. You know, a recruitment is an investment. An investment needs to be profitable. The KPI is what tells you whether this investment is profitable or not. You know, if you're going to spend, let's say, 36, 40, 50K on an employee, it's got to be profitable for your business.
It's got to bring it's
Otherwise,
about what it
you
brings you.
it's about what you otherwise you'd rather put that 50K out of the business and put it in crypto or shares or God knows whatever. You know what I mean? But you deciding to put it on an employee, that employee needs to, you know, bring more than it costs. So defining exactly what's the objective of your content team, you know, is it about bringing a lot of content to build authority, you know, or is it about bringing a lot of traffic, or what is it about? That's the first thing. Then from that, from your objective, resources that you're going to be needing, you know, what resources do you need? So you may need content writers, but maybe you also need expertise in a particular topic. Maybe you need link building, you know, you need quality links. Maybe you, so all of that, what actually do you need? And then once you have that, you know, it's basically the KPI, you know, how many article, how many words, what kind of level of expertise and this and that. And once you can actually nail this KPI properly, you know, two or three maximum per job, then you're ready to start recruiting. Then you pretty much have a green light, because from this KPI, from what that person needs to achieve, you can then derive like daily actions.
Like what
The
sort of skills they
KPI,
need and what they're going to do day to day.
That's it. What do they need to do? What action would that person need to take on a day-to-day basis to achieve that KPI?
Yeah.
Once you can define that, you're able to define what attitude, what skills, and what knowledge they need to take these actions to the highest level.
Mm, okay.
So attitude, skills, knowledge, that's, if you take like a mathematical thing, attitude plus skills plus knowledge, you multiply it by daily actions. That's how the daily actions are going to be done at a good level. So taking an example, the account manager job, you know, like the customer success that we've recruited together, you know, a lot of it is going to be, you know, having to take onboarding calls with clients. You know, that's an action.
Mm.
Now, the question is, what attitude, skills, and knowledge does that person need to take this call to a really high level? Well, the attitude is that she's going to be good listening skills.
Yeah.
You know, to really
make sense.
Asking open questions, good listening skills, patience as well, emotional stability, not raise to the tension if there's a bit of tension because people are frustrated with the service. Not that they are because you provide a good service, but let's say they are and stuff, you know what I mean? And then ability to go. Exactly. And then the other skill is project management, you know, being able to go to the back-end team and relate the information properly, so good communication, being organized. So all of that lined up, multiplied by all the daily action, gives you high performance.
Mm. And would you, I mean, it reminds me a bit of, I was reading Rockefeller Habits recently, and they suggest creating a job scorecard for every single person that you hire. And then it's like, right, attitudes, KPIs, and also the skills and experience. And then you sort of, you mark it objectively based on those criteria. Would you recommend something like that?
That's what I do for recruiting. So once I've got my KPI, the daily actions, attitude, skills, and knowledge, then I create an assessment to test whether that person has the attitude, the skills, and the knowledge, and I just call.
Interesting.
So, you know, if you remember when I sent you the extract of the people, you know, they had scores for each step. Out of five, and then the final score, you know, like, what do we think?
And they also had the, like the, you tested for sort of capabilities too, right? So for example, like typing speed, psychometrics.
That's it.
You can see if someone's got attention to detail, that sort of thing. Yeah.
That's it. So for example, if your listeners, I'm just going to give that for free. If your listeners want people who have good attention to details, they need to ask what I call the Rose question. So we can do it together. It's going to be quite fun, actually.
Here just you go. To see.
So Julian, describe me. Please, could you describe me a rose?
So let's go for an account manager.
Just say what goes to your head. Can you describe me a rose?
A rose. Oh, sorry, a rose.
A rose. Rose. You know the flower.
Yeah. So. Usually red.
Yeah.
Petals on it. Very pretty. I don't know. It's got that ambience to it, you know, like it reminds me of like a romantic ambience. Yeah.
Okay.
That sort of thing.
So the answer is that, so for your listeners, the answer that Julian gave, so that question is very, there's one way or another for answering it. People, we always have one way or another to answer it. There's the way Julian answered, and I will answer the same way. He quickly described the flower. I think he talked about the color, and then he moved on to emotions and symbolism. So that's a trait for someone who is a general thinker. He thinks about ideas, he thinks about strategies, he's got like general thinking. A person who is detail-oriented. So if you want to hire an accountant or you want to hire someone who is, you need a very detailed person, you wouldn't hire Julian necessarily. You know, you'd want someone else. So you're not getting the job on this one.
It's funny you say that. You know, I always wanted to be an accountant when I was younger, when I was at uni, and then I realized it's not for me. That job is definitely not for me.
And so a detailed person will answer that question. It will describe the rose, you know. It will stay on the rose. It will say the petals are X amount of diameters. The flower itself has that sort of diameter. It's got a straw that kind of length. It's got spikes and everything that are usually 3 or 3 millimeters. And it wouldn't really start delving on the, you know, romantics or love or that kind of things. It wouldn't talk about that. It would just stay on the flower and really describe it with details. And that's what a detailed person will do.
Very logical.
So that's a really good test. If you're looking for people who have a really good eye for detail, if they answer like this, then you can trust 99% they're going to have a very, very good eye for details.
I'm going to try that next time.
Yeah,
that's interesting. All right, so if you're recruiting, then first of all, you identify, you know, who that person is you're looking for. You'd reverse engineer that. You test based on those skills. Where would you attract people to the job advert?
So once you've done the job, you've got your KPI. I'm sorry, I'm repeating the same thing, but it's important your listeners really understand. Got your KPI. You've got your daily actions. From the daily action, you derive attitude, skills, knowledge. You start to get a flair for what kind of people you're looking for. And you're doing exactly what you would do for a marketing campaign. You're thinking about a persona. What kind of persona will like this? You should start being able to imagine, you know, the kind of people who would enjoy that job. So, and this is going to be very unpolitically correct, but it doesn't matter. Are we looking for a girl or a guy? Does it matter? Are we looking for someone who is a bit of a loner or who really wants to be part of a team and stuff like this? Do we need extrovert or introvert? You know, and you start having an idea of the kind of persona that you're looking for. Once you've got a good idea of that type of persona, then you can start marketing the job, and you're going to obviously market that job, number one, in a way that attracts that persona, and number two, in areas and places where that persona exists and hangs out and looks for job. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
So that's one way. The other way is if you're looking for very, 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 very specific skill sets. I don't know how your listeners are geared up when it comes to tech and stuff like this, but you sometimes want to gauge, number one, how many people have what I'm looking for.
Right.
So, for example, paid acquisitions. A lot of people are looking for like Google Ads Manager and so on. If you're looking for very, very good Google Ads Manager,
it's hard to find, isn't it? That one.
Yeah, I know. I've recruited quite a few, and I've been burned a few times on this and stuff. Now I kind of know like the good Google Ads Manager. There are people who have been at Google or Facebook or stuff like this.
Wow. So you want to recruit straight from the source then, or you know someone who's got experience in those companies.
If someone has someone has worked at Google for over a year, they're very clever. Full stop.
Yeah, I mean, that's at the top level, isn't
it? Top level, full stop. Yeah, so you're looking at, and besides, if they've worked at Google for, you know, 1 or 2 years, they will have contacts in there. They will have contacts in Google. They will know people in Google. They will have people at their intake, whatever, because it's a sort of company where they meet other people because, you know, culture and this and that. And
yeah, stuff. Networking.
So they will have contacts in Google. Also, people who work at Google, they're high commodity, you know, they're high quality. So they're recruited in top companies. So they might have contacts at ClickFunnels. They might have, because these people will go and work at ClickFunnels, they will work at ActiveCampaign and this and that and stuff. So that's why, in my opinion, I've tried it many times. Now I'm just looking for people. So once you know that, with a bit of LinkedIn and a bit of tech and stuff, you can build a list of all the people who are paid acquisition specialists and have worked at Google. And, you know, how many people are on that list tells you your talent pool.
So I guess at this point, if you're headhunting like that, it's relatively small, right? It's not like, for example, if you're recruiting a virtual assistant, you've got a choice of a silly amount of people. Yeah. Whereas if you're recruiting the top level, you know,
you're headhunting
the niche specialist writers or that sort of thing. Yeah.
And the more specialist you're going, which is why it's so important to know what level of expertise you need, especially for your content writer. If you're really looking for, like, for example, crypto content, you know, I know it's quite hot right now, crypto content. In English, you might be fine because there's quite a lot of people, but let's say you're looking for a French writer in crypto. Well, I can tell you right now, the talent pool is like this.
Tiny, yeah.
Super small. Super small.
So, I mean, do you need...
So that really impacts. So getting back to your question, that's going to impact dramatically how you source. If you're looking for your VA, you're going on onlinejobs.com or online PH job or something like this, you know.
Yeah.
If you have a good funnel for assessment, it doesn't really matter where you source, you're going to find someone. The key actually is not getting a lot of applicants for that. The key is finding the good ones out of inside a sea of applicants.
Yeah, filtering
out
the
your assessment is where it becomes 10%. Really important. That's it. However, if you're looking for, you know, the Google guy, for example, or the crypto writer in French, whatever, then you're looking at, you know, 500, 400 people maximum who can fit the description. Then the whole thing is around how do you attract these people? You know, and how do you make your job and your company and yourself, because that's what people look for. Like, good people are looking for three things. Number one, the job with the perks and everything. Number two, the company they're going to be working in. Does that fit with their emotional need, what they want to do with their life and everything? And number three, the people in the company. And mostly when you're talking about, you know, a company that's less than 100 people, the owner. That's a key thing, you know? So if you can make yourself, your company, and the job very attractive for these people, then you've got a very good chance, but you need to do the work around that.
So what sort of things would that involve? I mean, you know, in terms of, for me, for example...
So for you, for example, when we looked for...
Yeah.
So when we looked for the account manager, you know, I don't know if you remember, but I did all that work. You know, I first of all, I created a video for people to explain, you know, who I was, why I was recruiting. And then I introduced your company and I explained, you know, what your company was doing, where were they on the journey. I said that very honestly, you know, I said where you were and everything. And then I talked about you. I sent a few of your podcasts as a resources for people to listen to. Where you talk about, I selected one where you were talking about team culture and stuff like this with someone else. I can't remember which episode now, but I found one where you were talking about these subjects.
That might have been with Mads Singer.
That's this one. Yes. It was with Mads. Yes, that's right. So, and I send that on purpose because then people can hear you talking about these things so they can know exactly what you think about this stuff. Do you know what I mean? And that makes you, number one, that makes you real as a person. And number two, that makes you attractive. Because people like hearing about this stuff and they like hearing your opinion about these topics and everything if they want to work with you. And this way you get a very good, the people who are really interested and really serious about the job, they're going to watch all these contents and they're going to be very, they have a lot of buy-in at that point to join your company. And that's especially important if you're looking at a small talent pool. You can get away with it if you, but my view personally when I recruit is, you know, you can get away with it if you're recruiting for a virtual assistant. But
I think anyone
who's looking for a job and you want to attract talent at all level, you know, you should always do it like this because, you know, it's also a sign of respect to people who apply for a job with you.
Absolutely. Which I have a great deal of respect for because, I mean, you know, they go for it. It's not easy being a job seeker, is it? Like searching for jobs, applying, like the process is really difficult. I have a lot of respect for people going through that.
And if you're going to ask people to go through quite a lengthy assessment, for example, especially typically, so that's a good one, content writers, ideally you're going to ask them to write a content piece. You know, you're going to ask them to write 500 words at least. And if you do that work where you present your company, you do some video content and whatever, you're going to have a much bigger uptake on the assessment. A lot more people will fill up the assessment because you've given something, you know, you've given some material, you've given something, you've presented yourself and everything. People have seen all this stuff. And so, you know, the assessment uptake is going to be incredibly higher. And a lot of people as well, you need to remember that people who are good, they have choice for job.
For sure.
People are very good at choice for job. So, the more content, the higher your uptake on assessment, that means actually the difference in the kind of people who take the assessments is it's a good people. Because if your recruitment process is bad and you're not, you know, marketing yourself and you're in the recruitment process, it's a good people who drop out. The good people makes are going to think, that's a shit company. I don't want to work for these fuckers. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to work
if you don't represent executives.
That's it.
If you don't represent yourself professionally or if you don't come across as... It's first impressions, isn't it? You only get one chance, I guess. Yeah.
That's it. And if you have an assessment, if you only have a 10% take on your assessment, that's a 10% bottom of people. They're the one who are desperate, who really, really need to fill up every possible assessment. If you have 90% of take, you know, the last 10 or 20%, you know, between 70 and 90 are the really, really good people.
Right.
Because they're very picky. They don't fill up any assessment. They're really picky about, because they know their worth.
Yeah. Yeah. They got options and they understand
that.
That's it.
Yeah. That's it. That's it.
Awesome. Well, I've learned a lot today already. So, I mean, the one thing I would say is, like, you know, the mistake I see with a lot of people on websites, you know, for example, I've lived in Chiang Mai, where there's a big community of people running affiliate websites and that sort of thing. And
yeah,
the biggest mistake I see with them is that, number one, they don't outsource enough. And when they do, they go for the cheapest possible route and then wonder why they don't get the results that they're looking for. So I think all the tips that you've shared today will help a lot for anyone who implements them.
But I think as well, to be honest, like, the, I don't know if you've ever watched the film Moneyball, you know, with Brad Pitt when he's building the baseball team.
Oh, yeah, with the stats and the baseball cards.
And everything, yeah. So when you're at that situation, when you don't have much money because your business is not that profitable, well, first of all, you should have a profitable business because otherwise you're not going to scale, but that's the side thing. But if you don't have that much money right now to pay high wage and everything and be very attractive on that end, then number one, how can you be attractive with other perks you can give? And you can be creative with this.
Makes
and
sense.
Then number two is, can you find value in some people that others have missed? And that's down to your assessment. And if you really, like, if you bother to do what I said, you know, KPI, daily actions, attitude, skills, knowledge, and really work on that person and everything, you will ask questions in your assessments that will reveal qualities that others haven't seen. Because most people's assessment and way of recruiting is shit. And that's why they're recruiting wrong people.
Like 90% are not doing this. I know from my own experience when I've worked for companies in the past or seen other entrepreneurs on recruit. Yeah. Awesome.
And cool. So the whole question is, can you find gem? Can you find gold that is actually quite cheap? That's a real trick if you're in that situation, you know?
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I mean, personally, you know, we've worked with you. We hired an account manager for you, and we were blown away basically by the people we recruited. Like, if people listen to this want to get in touch for your services, how can they do that?
They just email me. We can put the email address, but it's Julien, J-U-L-I-E-N. That's the only difference between you and I. You've got an A, I've got an E. So J-U-L-I-E-N at jpnbconsulting.com. That's the name of my company.
Awesome. I'll put the link below on the video as well then.
No problem. Yeah. No problem.
Cool. All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Julien. Thanks for having me at the podcast.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this episode of SEO Link Building with Julien Goldie. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. If you'd like to boost your SEO rankings, drive more traffic, and land more customers with link building, book a call with Julien today at juliengoldie.com.